Reverend Charles Doom lives in Prince George's County now, but in 1963, he was just out of high school, living in D.C. He says he almost stayed home.
But my uncle, which was my mother's brother, he pastored in Second Baptist Church in Perth Amboy, New Jersey. And he and some of his peers who were pastors, they were coming down for the march because they would come to our house. I made a decision that I was going to go. I was going to be a part of their delegation.
My mother was approached by a neighbor that day. You could feel it in the air, you know, that something was afoot with the march and all that. This neighbor had a son who was close to my age and my brother's age, and she wanted to take the four of us over to the march. And my mother said no.
Ralph Moore was 11 in 1963, living in West Baltimore. Like many, he says, his mother worried that the march would not be peaceful.
They closed the bars in Washington, D.C. that day. They canceled the Washington Senators baseball game that day and the day after. They had lots of police there in town, and police were required to work very long shifts. There was just a lot of nervousness.
We left early in the morning, on Saturday morning, but in the chartered bus.
Mary Alterman was 16, living in New York City then, in Towson now. Going to sit-ins and protests were part of growing up. Her parents took her, her brother, and her cousin to the march.
I really remember how many buses there were on the highway. There was just buses after bus, and you could just, everyone was waving at each other. It was a real feeling of solidarity. And then arriving where they let people off, and it was just packed with buses.
When I got downtown, I just saw a mass of people, you know, all races, all colors, you know, all creeds.
Reverend Doom.
And it was really, like, overwhelming, because I had never been in a crowd that large before. And so I'm caught up in with the signs, marching the route.
But others couldn't make it. Former Congressman and NAACP Chairman Kwaisi Mfume's mother was holding down two jobs at the time.
She wanted so much, I remember, to go to the march and realize that didn't have necessarily the means to be away from her, either of her jobs, even for a few hours, to take all of us over. So we watched on a small 10-inch black and white Philco TV. And when they panned the crowd in Washington, it just, I stared because I couldn't believe that all those people were there for anything, for one single purpose.
What was terribly impressive about the march was the courtesy and the equality.
Arthur Jones, a Brit, lives in Moncton, but in 1963, he was a reporter for the Catholic Star Herald in Newark. He was assigned to cover the march.
There were sort of two or three waves to it as I looked back, and indeed as I wrote it. One of them was that when people began to arrive for the staging area, it was very, very jubilant. I wasn't the sort of reporter to stay with the press crew. I just dove into the crowd and talked to people. And in doing that, at the staging area, which was the Washington Monument, you would see a new contingent arrive from somewhere, and it was all very chatty, and people were just getting to know one another and pleased to be there, and then another contingent would arrive from another state or another city, and there'd be applause, and they'd be welcomed. And then the people arrived from Mississippi, and they didn't smile, they didn't wave back, they were embraced right into the heart of the crowd. But there was a mood change. People realized the seriousness. Nobody knew it better than the Mississippians. And so that was a second shift in the mood. The third shift in the mood came at 11:15. The march was supposed to move off at 11:30. And the crowd, of its own volition, started to move towards the Lincoln Memorial. And the leaders had to catch up.
Mary Alterman.
I really remember was Mahalia Jackson singing, because that was, you know, that was a big deal. And I remember we were on one side of the reflecting pool, and I just remember, I guess because it was a hot summer day, Everyone was dressed nicely. I mean, most of the men had collared shirts.
Up at the Lincoln Memorial, what you had was people had brought all forms of blankets, chairs. Some people climbed trees. Some people sat on the monument steps if they could squiggle in a bit.
Kwaisi Mfume.
I remember the charge that was being given to all the people way out there sitting under the trees, "We need to hear you," and how they would roar every time someone from the podium would say that.
"I want some of you to help me win a bet. I want everybody out here in the open to keep quiet. And I want to hear a yell and a thunder from all those people who are out there under the trees. Let's hear you." Yeah. Yeah. There's one of them in the tree.
I remember Walter Ruther's speech. He was at the UAW, who represented organized labor that day.
"This rally is not the end. It's the beginning. It's the beginning of a great moral crusade to arouse America to the unfinished work of American democracy."
Reverend Charles Dew.
So, of course, you hear a lot of speeches. You hear a lot of people talking around you. And then,
"I have the pleasure to present to you Dr. Martin Luther King."
Dr. King takes the podium. He speaks. And just the things that he said, you know, for me, when I think about it, it was really phenomenal.
"The Negro, you know, still is not free.
Something that inspired us, so, you know,
later,
that gave us hope. You know, that change is going to take place, things are going to be better, you know.
"By the manacles of segregation and the chains of discrimination, 100 years later."